So then we'll switch to English and welcome our next speaker. Have fun.
Thank you. So first of all, I'm Mathilde de Groot. I work for Cumulus Networks, and I was like, I'll introduce myself. The reasoning is that a lot of people have difficulty pronouncing my last name. And actually, I want to call out one of our customers. They gave me this t-shirt. So if you want to call me Groot, I'll accept it. So I'm going to tell you something today about a bit about Cumulus, a bit an intro, but mostly about EVPN on hosts. Now, first, question. Who knows what Cumulus Linux is? A few. Okay, that's good. Sorry for a few, then I'll give a short introduction why I'm here and what I'm actually doing. So, Cumulus Networks, we develop Cumulus Linux, which is an operating system that runs on top of bare metal switches. So, the reasoning for doing that in the first place is if you look at an Amazon, Facebook, Google, also called the Big Five, they are mostly not using network equipment from the big vendors. What they do is they go to Taiwan, they make their own designs from hardware even. So Facebook does that, if you're interested in it. This week was the Open Compute Project in the US. And what Facebook does is they design their own network hardware and they make that publicly available. So you can download the specs of the switches and you can have to produce yourself. I'm pretty sure you have to order at least 10,000 to make it viable, but you will be able to do that. Now, they do that so they obviously can get financial discounts, but also they have more influence on how the hardware works, etc. Now, what they also do is they build their own operating system on top. And they do that so that they have an operating system that integrates better with their own applications, with their own massive infrastructures. But obviously, most people here don't work at a Facebook and Google, and those companies don't have the resources to build their own operating system. Now, that is exactly what Cumulus is, or what we do. We develop Cumulus Linux, and that runs on top of that bare metal switches. And the idea is we chose a Linux operating system so that it integrates well with the applications and your entire data center, what you already have. Because in most cases, you have a rack, you have 20, 30 servers in it, and you have two switches on top. So why would you have a different OS for that? Now, how does that work with hardware, and what do you actually buy? Do you buy some strange switch in Taiwan, and what do you actually get? Now, if you look at how that hardware is developed, it is actually developed by a few ODMs. There are only six or seven in the world who actually produce the hardware. That are companies like Celestica. Anyone here that ever heard of the company Celestica? Other than Waldemar. So no one. So that's actually a Canadian company. They have over 150,000 employees, and they manufacture hardware. Other companies like that are the Acton Group, DNI, Flextronics, and they produce the actual hardware. So that means that even at Juniper, Cisco, Arista, they go to those ODMs to have their hardware produced. Now, those same companies work together with companies like Dell, or they have a subsidiary. EdgeCore is a known one. And they produce white label switches. Now, Dell and Mellanox and such, they are not known for white label, but they basically make their own designs as well, same like a Cisco does. But they usually offer additional services that you can buy, such as 4-hour replacement and such. Now, this is all possible because the hardware itself is very commodity. If you look at the switch, it's pretty much an x86 board. It has a CPU, memory, LEDs, fans, etc. If you want to switch and route high volume traffic, a 100 gig box needs to be able to switch 3.2 terabits, or if you have more ports, then even more. But that is done by an ASIC. The market leader at this point is Broadcom. They have an entire series of ASICs that are built in those boxes. Other companies are Mellanox. They have a Spectrum ASIC that does the same. If you are familiar with Mellanox, probably because of the NICs, because they are market leader on that. And there are a few other ASIC manufacturers as well. But from Cumulus' perspective, we support these two. Now, from the operating system, how does Cumulus look like? Because that is the interesting part for us. If you look at a classical operating system, be that NXOS, Arista, Huawei VRP, even JunOS, they are running on a small kernel, most of them Linux, Juniper BSD, in some cases also Linux, but they use it to boot the device. So they don't actually do anything with the kernel. They have one or more proprietary applications running on top of that kernel that provides you with the CLI, an API, but the BGP daemons and whatnot, they're all proprietary and such. So what we have done as Cumulus is that we are a fork of Debian. Our current version is Debian Jesse. The next version will be Debian Buster, so we are skipping one. Basically what we've done is we're using everything in the Linux kernel. So a Linux kernel is already able to do IP forwarding, VLANs, MAC learning, all the network functionalities that you know of. We have built an additional daemon, a switching daemon, that looks at the netlink messages going between user space and kernel space, and it offloads that to hardware. So that means if traffic has to be forwarded from one port to the other, it will be done by the ASIC, and you won't see it in the operating system. That is similar to what you have in all operating systems. So all the forwarding of the traffic is done in hardware and at those speeds that it's need to, because a standard x86 CPU can't forward that fast. Now, how do you get that information into the Linux kernel? How do you get your configuration? As I said, we're a fork of Debian. So you can use standard IP route bridging tools to program the kernel. Now, that isn't very scalable. Would want to use other configuration tools. So what we've done is we've created IF Updown 2, which is a new version of IF Updown, more focused on how you would manage a network device. But if you build a network these days, you will pretty much build a layer 3 network. Now, for that, you need to have your routing protocols, OSPF, BGP, EVPN, protocol, independent multicast, etc. For that, we use free-range routing. Free-range routing, if you're not familiar with it, it's a fork of Quagga. Quagga got forked about 2.5 years ago, and it contains all those daemons. It is open source, it is a separate project, and that is running on the system and programming the kernel if it has learned a new route over a routing protocol, etc. Now, if you look at large-scale networking, what is important for us as Cumulus, but if you want to manage large-scale networks, is automation these days. So given that it's a standard Linux operating system, you can use Ansible, you can install your Puppet agent, Chef, whatever you choose, so you can configure it in the same way that you would do a server. Now, all those tools that I just mentioned, what Cumulus does is we open source everything that we do as much as we can. That means that we have several kernel maintainers, so all the patches are upstreamed into the Linux kernel as well. Free-range routing, if you look at the implementations that Cumulus has made, there are a bunch of them in there. But free-range routing is maintained by about 12 different companies mainly. But if you want to know the exact name, go to the website. But also other things that we do, like the bootloader that you'll find on standardized switches. That is called ONI, the Open Network Install Environment. You could compare it a bit with PXE that you have on servers. When we started, there was no such thing. So you had to do quite some work to install an operating system on a device. Now, all bare metal switches come with ONI, and you can basically install any operating system, Cumulus included. Now, how are you then going to build a network? If you look at networks these days, they are all spine leaf topologies. Now, I don't want to keep that much of your time, but this is basically how you would see it these days, because I can talk for like 2 hours on how you can scale a spine leaf topology. But the idea is that between your spines, if you would compare it to anything, you could name it a core, and your leaf switches, which used to be your access switches, everything is layer three. So you are using a routing protocol, and that is pretty much all BGP. You can use others, but if you look online, Facebook and Google, pretty much all are using BGP. And all deployments as well. Now, still you need to have layer two. I'd rather not, but there are several use cases why you would want to have layer two in your network. That means that towards your servers, you would connect MLAG. And in most cases, that works just fine. But that is something that we're going to talk about. Now, to push that layer two over your layer three infrastructure, you build an overlay network. There are several tunneling protocols for that, but VXLAN is by far the most popular one. And you need a control plane for that, which is EVPN. EVPN is an addition to BGP. So you are building your network with BGP, and you are using EVPN to distribute all your layer two to build your connectivity. Now, and that is basically what led me to EVPN on a host. So we are open sourcing all the advances that we're making. And I was thinking like, okay, how can you make a step further with that? How can you integrate that better with hosts? What are the possibilities with that? Because I don't want to give another presentation on EVPN. I think that enough vendors have done that already. So I'd like to go over some of those use cases where you could use EVPN on hosts, what the deployment issues are, and how you can integrate EVPN and other standardized Linux tools on hosts that have been built. Now, the most obvious use case is running VMs on your hypervisors in your network. That would pretty much be KVM, because VMware, obviously, we can't do anything with that. But the environment, even if you use VMware NSX, the idea is the same. So what you see is that you currently have that MLAG connection to your hypervisors. One or more VMs are in a VLAN connecting to your host. And VMware NSX or OpenStack, they build some kind of overlay network, usually also VXLAN, towards a dedicated network node. The network node makes sure that you can communicate to the rest of the world, be it other locations, be it the internet. But that network node does the routing to your underlay. So everything that goes outside your internal network. That does mean if you have already EVPN in your spine leaf network, you will have double encapsulation. Now, that doesn't really matter these days because it's all done in hardware. But if you want to troubleshoot something like that, it could be hard. Now, what are the problems with that? MLAG to hypervisors. Who likes MLAG to his servers here? Why do you like it?
It's good for redundancy.
It's good for redundancy. Anyone else? Okay. Well, so that's where I'm going, but I'll be there in a bit. MLAG has been developed by multiple vendors. Unfortunately, it's not a standard. I think it's reasonably stable from all the vendor implementations. The problem, however, it is not a standard. People are saying, okay, it's still layer two. I rather don't have that in my network. Now, you have the VXLAN tunnels between the hosts. From a network perspective, you have no visibility on what is going on between those hosts. If you would snoop a packet that goes over your network, what you'll see is a UDP packet, and you have no idea what's inside. Your troubleshooting is quite difficult, and with the double overlay, it becomes even more difficult. Those dedicated network nodes, that means that everything that has to go to the outside world needs to pass through a network node, which could be a bottleneck if you don't have enough bandwidth. It could be some kind of single point failure, or you have to take any sort of redundancy measures there. And also, how are you going to orchestrate it? If you look at the different use cases in your network, say that you have some hypervisors, but you also have some bare metal hosts, how are you going to manage that? How are you going to integrate the two? Now, there are some solutions. OVSDB, if you're working with VMware NSX. ML2, if you're working with OpenStack. But it's all not very ideal. Now, another use case would be containers. I think that everyone has noticed that Kubernetes is quite useful and quite popular these days. Now, what you already see in container environments is that you have routing towards a hypervisor or a containervisor, for lack of a better word. That means that you can announce the IP addresses of one or more containers into your network. So you have that redundancy. You are already gone from MLAG, and everything is balanced. It is redundant, etc. Now, also, this implementation has some issues. Host networking itself. What you typically do these days is that one host with containers is dedicated for that customer. Otherwise, you would have to separate management. You have to do things with ACLs. That is not very... that's a lot of management work. Also, you can't overlap IP prefixes. And despite that, as a network engineer or a system engineer, you keep telling your customers, like, don't pick 10.0.0.1. And they still do that. So everyone likes the same IP address, but if you have these kinds of shared environments, you can't do that. Now, that is what what made me look at EVPN. I think that EVPN can solve these use cases and the issues with them. Now, what do we need for that, and what has been done over time? There have been a few advancements in the Linux kernel that we can take or that we can use. One of them is the VLAN-aware bridge. Anyone heard here about the VLAN-aware bridge? A few people, that's cool. If you look at the current VLAN implementations in Linux, the VLAN-aware bridge has been there for quite some years. But everyone knows that if you want to configure multiple VLANs, you define multiple bridges. If you would do that on a network device or a host with a lot of VLANs, you have to define the same number of bridges. From a configuration perspective, that's quite annoying. But also the control plane that comes with it. For every VLAN and every update that you have to send another netlink message. And if you look at that from a bare metal switch perspective, then it also has to be programmed in hardware. So it's not that scalable. VRF in the Linux kernel. Over the years, it has been tried multiple times to implement VRFs in the Linux kernel, but it was never accepted upstream. It was tried a bit with network namespaces to separate tenants, but that was never accepted because, yeah, that is basically not how you would see a VRF from a network perspective. If you're not familiar with the VRF, it is basically a separation of multiple routing tables. So every routing table does its own routing, and you can't reach one host. You can't have traffic between hosts in different VRFs. Some exceptions ignored there. Now, VXLAN has been in the Linux kernel since 3.1, I believe. So that is something that you can use. Cumulus has implemented eVPN, and that has been upstream to free-range routing. They have announced 7.0 last week, and I believe that there have been over 20,000 lines of code changed again since 6.0. One of our developers posted a while back a nice graph how the development was going in free-range routing, and that just goes up and to the right. So I think it's very good for the feature velocity there. But also the tools like IFUpdown 2 that Cumulus made, additions that were made to IPRoute 2. So that is what we can all use on a host to change that host networking. Now, how does it work with eVPN? And are we making it more complicated? Yes, we are definitely making it more complicated. So that will definitely be an issue in day-to-day management. If you look at how hosts are being managed, they have been managed for 20 years for the same way. So someone gets an IP, it configures, it gets configured on an interface, and everyone is happy. Now, that does mean that if you are a network engineer, you should be involved with your system guys. But also, if you are a system system guy, get help from your network engineer to implement something like this. So what are we doing? We're defining interfaces, but luckily we don't have to configure IP addresses on them. So one thing that free-range routing has, it has an implementation called BGP unnumbered. BGP unnumbered means that you can set up a BGP session the same way like you would configure a serial link. Who is familiar here with serial links and unnumbered configuration? Okay, I hope that never gets more. I have never worked with it in a production environment, simply because I'm too young for that. But some vendors still want it in their certification programs. Not the new Cumulus one, by the way. Now, what BGP unnumbered does is that it is basically fake unnumbered, because there is a number on it, which is the IPv6 link local address. With router advertisements, part of the IPv6 standard, you can detect who your neighbor is, and you can set up a BGP session. Now, that will be a V6 session, but there is an RFC 5549 that you can use to also announce your IPv4 prefixes over it. And as soon as you have that, you announce your loopback address, and that is basically the routing that you are doing from a host perspective. So you are announcing a loopback address, so every host in your network has that loopback address, and that means that from a VXLAN perspective, it will be the tunnel endpoint. So every tunnel that you will build will end up on that loopback address. Now, the next thing that you have to do from a BGP configuration is that you have to enable your eVPN address family. So what you are seeing here, it's a pretty much static configuration that you could roll out on every host. Obviously, if you look at BGP, you can make it much more complex, but this is a basic configuration. Now, what can you do with eVPN exactly? EVPN is, if you want to read the spec, feel free to do so. But a short introduction, it consists of multiple type messages that you can use. And an important one is a type 2 message. And a type 2 message is a combination of a MAC address and an IP address that is announced to all other listeners. And that means that the other listeners now know where to reach that MAC address. So if you look at the configuration on the host from the VLAN perspective, is that you have a VM that typically has a virtual interface, I'll call it ETH0, that you tie into a VLAN on that host. Now, the VLAN is part of the VLAN aware bridge. And as soon as you have created that, you tie a VNI into it, which is the VXLAN tunnel. If you have that ready, free range routing with EVPN picks it up and it will start announcing the MAC addresses that are learned in that bridge. And that means that all other hosts, so another VM on another host, can reach that VM at the same time. Now, this is all nice, and now we have the same communication that we already had. But obviously, we don't want to make it more complicated and don't get anything out of it. So what can you get out of it? One of the things is ARP and ND suppression. I think we all agree that it's not scalable to build a large-scale layer 2 environment. So what you want to do is you want to have more control on how your MAC addresses are learned, broadcast messages that are sent. And with ARP suppression, you can do that. That means that if that VM here on the left will send an ARP request and the kernel already knows about that MAC IP combination, it can answer on behalf of the original host with the proxy ARP. So that means that all the other VMs in the network won't receive that broadcast of that VM. Now, another thing that you can do is you can do distributed routing. And that basically means is the gateway that you normally have on, say, an external router or an external firewall, you can configure that on every host along the way. The reasoning is that in EVPN, what I said, you have more control over your broadcast domain. So by default, the gateway that you have configured is not announced to any other host. So all traffic will be routed locally. And that means that if you have two VMs that are in the same VRF or multiple ones, everything is routed on the host itself. If you would compare that to the what I said earlier with a dedicated network node, there it has to go to the network node and then back if you have a VM on the same host but in a different subnet. Now, another thing that you can do is you can integrate it with VRFs as well. That means that you have normally you have that single box, say with a container environment, but now you can separate the tenants into a VRF. You can overlap IP spaces, and you can use EVPN Type 5 announcements. Now you don't have to know the details about the Type 5s. But what you basically do is you announce your prefix that is being used on that host so that it's reachable, but also from the outside world. So if you have an external router, you announce a default route that will end up with the Type 5 message on the host, and everything will be routed locally. Now, what can you do with container hosts even more? So what I said, you can split it up into multiple VRFs. But one thing that the Linux kernel has is that you can create multiple routing tables. So that means that you can create multiple container environments on a single host. And that means that if you have multiple customers that are buying a Kubernetes environment or multiple projects, You can dedicate one host to multiple of them. You can overlap the prefixes if you want. And you don't need to use ACLs because, as I said at the beginning, hosts or tenants can't reach each other between different VRFs. Now, another issue that we are solving with running EVPNs on hosts or EVPN on hosts is the integration with bare metal hosts. So what I said before is if you have an overlay network with VMware NSX or with OpenStack, you need to use an OVSDB. Now, since EVPN is a standard, it is an RFC, it is supported by multiple vendors. You set up your BGP sessions that you already have. And if you connect that same VXLAN tunnel on those specific switches, you can include a bare metal host as well. So no need for running any proprietary protocols. You can use whatever what you already have. Now, one thing that you have to keep in mind is that what I'm presenting here and what I'm demoing in a bit, it's a proof of technology. So it works. We have a few tech-savvy customers that are using it in production, but you do need a very new kernel. So in my demo, I'm using kernel 4.19, which is the long-term support. But before that, there are some patches in 4.14 that you need for ARP and ND suppression. There were some bugs with VXLAN in later releases, so you have to be very new. If you use something like Red Hat 7, then you already have an issue because that's an older kernel, and how are you going to support that with Red Hat, for example? Now, also the tools and who gives commercial support on that. Cumulus, we don't, for some customers, we do give commercial support on free range routing. But they are quite large. So you do need to find someone who will be able to give you commercial support on that, or you need to accept that you are on your own with community support. I'm not sure if you want to run your production environment without having anyone to call if it all breaks down. Now, some future work and what the possibilities are. Deorchestration. So OpenStack, while you can implement this with OpenStack, you would have to do it all manually. Because Neutron in OpenStack has no idea about VRFs. It doesn't know anything about FR and EVPN. I've been looking at it a bit, but the documentation with that part is quite lacking in OpenStack. So if you're an OpenStack developer, talk to me and maybe we can look at it together. Same thing for containers. If you look at Kubernetes or Docker Swarm, they have no idea about VRFs or free range routing as well. Also, what I said earlier is how are you going to do your management? We like to see that everyone knows a bit about networking and servers. Some people more about servers than networking and the other way around. But there's still a lot of companies where you have network engineers in one room, system engineers in the other, and everything goes through a ticket system, and I don't think they have ever seen each other. A few limitations in the technology. Right now, VXLAN and EVPN is, in some cases, you still need to send a broadcast message. If a host is silent, then a bridge or a VLAN has never learned that MAC address. So then it still needs to send a broadcast. Now, that is being done using Anycast in switches on merchant silicon. That has a limitation. You can have a maximum of 250 switches in that same domain. Now, many of you might think, okay, I might have 30 or 40 switches, but nowhere near that. Still, it could be a limitation that you run into. Now, it is something that we are solving. We plan to do replication using multicast. That is part of the original VXLAN RFC, but it was never implemented for most vendors. But that should be there, hopefully, this year. Route leaking. I said earlier, tenants in different VRFs can't reach each other. The exception for that is route leaking. So typically, you don't want to people to reach each other in different VRFs. But there might be exceptions, such as a service VLAN or a service tenant where your DNS server is, maybe a DHCP relay or whatever general services that you want to have available for all your tenants. Now, route leaking has been implemented in free-range routing, and it will be available next month. So that is good, and this part is solved. Now, what can we do more in the future? Micro-segmentation. If you look at VMware NSX, they are quite big on how do you separate applications from each other. So application A can reach application B, and B can reach C, but A cannot reach C. Now, that is something that I'd like to see implemented. There have been great advancements in eBPF in the Linux kernel. If you are interested in that, look it up. But performance is quite high if you do filtering in the kernel. Now, you also want to do a distribution of that filtering. BGP also has an implementation for that, which is BGP Flow Spec. Free range routing has part of Flow Spec implemented, but I think that you can have a distributed model using Flow Spec as well. Now, then it's demo time. So what I did, I built a small virtual environment. So if you think back about the first slide about the architecture of Qmless, is that we use everything in the Linux kernel and we offload it to hardware. So one thing that we did is we built a virtual appliance. You can download it for free, play around with it, use it in Vagrant, and build entire topologies. And that means that traffic will be handled the same as it would be on hardware, but there is just no hardware, so it won't be offloaded. All traffic is forwarded by the Linux kernel itself. But that does mean that you can prototype, do everything the same, and you expect it to be handled the same as well. So what I did is I built a spine leaf topology with two pods and super spines. I only booted one of the pods because I don't need more. But server 1, 2, 5, and 6 are normal hosts. I did install some patches. But 3 and 4 are running eVPN on hosts. So what I'm first going to show you a bit is that connectivity actually works. So what I did on this host, server 1 is a normal host, I did implement VRFs on it. The reason is that it makes routing much more easier and testing and such, because they all have their own routing table. What you can see here is that I have 6 VRFs, and you can see that each of them has their own default route. So if I want to ping something, and I have an annoying Apple keyboard. So what you can see is that I can just reach another host. So 16, it ends with a 6, which is basically server 6. Now, so a customer of mine is working a lot with IPv6. So what I did in this demo, I made IPv6 working as well. So this all just works, and this is just fine. Now, if I look a bit at the configuration of this normal host, I all configured it with Ansible. But basically, what you see is that I have a bond over my two uplinks. So it is just layer two. And the bond has six different VLANs for every VRF one. So I just have a unique IP that I can ping and... okay, I need to hurry up. So let me quickly show you then how an EVPN on a server works. So I have a bit more a complicated configuration here. So what I said is that I need to configure two BGP sessions from my server to the top of rack switch. So what you see here on server 03, it has two BGP unnumbered sessions, one over each interface. And if I look in the IP routing table, what I said is I'm only announcing loopback addresses everywhere. So you see only some single addresses from the hosts in the network that all the tunnels are being built up to. Now, what I did in the configuration here is the most interesting part. Let me see if I can explain all of this. So I have VLAN 1000 here. And in VLAN 1000, I tied it into a network namespace because I want to simulate a VM. But I'm already virtualizing everything, so I don't want to run VMs in VMs. So every VM or every network namespace has its own IP address. So if I would show that. So you can see here that this network namespace has one IP address, 10.30. And that is actually routed into that into that part. Now, if I would want to ping that, so instead of the physical server that I was pinging earlier, then you can see that it just works. So I have full reachability between a normal host and an EVPN host. Now, the last thing that I want to show and I want to end up with is that I showed you some pinging hosts. Who believes me that I actually ping between two different hosts? Oh, that's cool. So most vendors, when they give a presentation, they always show you a ping and yeah, it works in my virtual environment. Yeah, great. So I was quite annoyed by that, so I was like, okay, how can I improve that in a demo? So what I did is every network namespace, every physical server, I installed iPerf on that. And what you see here is that I'm running an Ansible playbook, and that Ansible playbook sets up iPerf and creates a full mesh of very small streams. So in the end, you should see XL traffic going over that. And on all the switches, I have installed NetQ, which is our visibility software. But one thing that I did is I tied Grafana into it. So Grafana is running in that virtual environment. And what you are seeing is that I have connected Leaf 03 and Leaf 04 to it. And hopefully, in a bit, it should show some traffic that is actually being sent over the interfaces. And that always takes longer than I'm expecting. Yeah, there it is. So, what you see is that iPerf is running between these hosts, and you have actual traffic. And yeah, with that, I want to end the presentation. If you want to check out this demo, it is on GitHub. You can download it. We have a popular Slack channel. I'm there as well if you want to ask some questions. If you really don't like Slack, we do have a IRC channel, but there are 10 people in there, and the last chat was months ago. So that's how it works these days. So that's it. And if you have any questions,
yeah, thank you very much. And yeah, questions.
So thanks for the talk. I just played around with it on my own on another part. So we actually use Bird as a router, and I'd like to have EVPN there as well. Mm-hmm. So I'd looked into some side projects. So there's GoBGP and YayBGP. I don't know how you pronounce it. So one in Python and another one in Go. Yeah. And there you have to share the MAC addresses using something like JSON calls to announce the MACs you have on your system into the BGP environment. So, and I just wonder, how do you do it with the FRR? So do you learn it from the bridge on your own, or is there some Netlink magic? What did you do?
Yeah. So if you look at free range routing, every routing protocol has its own daemon, and they all talk to the zebra daemon. Which you can compare to being a rib on a normal router. Zebra talks Netlink to the kernel. So if a new MAC address is learned, it is being learned by Zebra and thus BGP and EVPN. So no messing around with JSON there.
Further questions?
Hi, I'm curious. How fast is it? I mean, if I have gigabit between all those hosts.
So one thing that you have to keep in mind on hosts, if you are doing that, is that you are building VXLAN tunnels. They have to be encapsulated and decapsulated. A standard x86 CPU can do 1.4, 1.5 gig of VXLAN encapsulation. But there are a lot of standardized NICs that can do VXLAN in hardware these days. So both Mellanox, Intel, they have these cards. So if you are a bit in the higher segment, you can do the offloading. And yeah, then you're limited by the speed of the NIC.
But the VIFs are connected to the loopback interfaces, right? So
yeah, but that doesn't matter. It can still offload to the NIC for that. If you just use plain Linux, it depends on the CPU architecture, but last I looked, it was about 1.4, 1.5 gig of traffic that it could encapsulate and decapsulate. It has to be done by a single core, so you can have a CPU with 20 cores, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, we've got still some minutes. So, one question.
Hi, do you still need several Netlink interfaces, one for each VNI, or is it possible to tie one VXLAN Netlink interface into a bridge and use direct VLAN to VNI mapping?
Every VNI is mapped to a different VLAN.
I know that, but I think currently you need Netlink. You need to do IP-link add VXLAN for each VNI.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So the Linux kernel doesn't have like a VNI aware model. That is done, and it has been. I'm not sure if it is upstreamed or it will be, but it's coming.
As of 3 weeks ago, it wasn't, and I'm waiting for that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we upstream things quite fast. If you want to have a real date, I can get it for you, but you have to.
It's not a problem. Great work. Thank you.
So, further questions? Does not seem to be the case. So, well then, thanks again for your nice presentation, and thanks for listening.